on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, March 19th, 2026 edition of InvestTalk. And it is the first day of March Madness. It's the first day of Market Madness. So if you filled out your brackets, there's the first day of the first round and the winners. So we'll have more on that over on our YouTube channel. So check on some content that we'll be posting before the weekend. And, you know, but today is really about answering your finance and investment questions, going over what happened in the market today. It was a very interesting day, per usual, for 2026, and we'll unpack what the market gyrations were, what the economic news was, all of that going forward. But ultimately, our main goal is to answer your finance and investment questions. We want to know what is on your mind. What are you thinking about? What can we bring clarity to in your mind? How can we help you make better decisions with your money? That's what we do each and every day on InvestTalk. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hello, my name's David from San Jose. Calling regarding Hershey Company, HSY. Had the stock for a while now. Wondering if I should hold on to it or just get rid of it. Looking forward to your answer. Thank you.
Are looking at Hershey, HSY is the symbol. This is the name that we've been buying up for clients for some time. Back when it was in the 160 range. Now we're trading right around 210, 2.6% yield. And last year, they had a big dip in earnings, down 33%. Why is that? Because cacao prices were up. And what does Hershey do? They make chocolate. What goes into chocolate? Cacao. So that hurt their margins. But if you look historically, the cure for high prices in the commodity markets is always high prices. And we knew eventually that would be cured in some way, shape, or form. And it has been as of late. And that's why earnings are expected to bounce back to $8.38 this year, up 33%. And then up to $9.85 next year, which would be an all-time high in earnings, even though we're still down from its 2023 high when it was at $280 per share. So to us, that was a buying opportunity. And we obviously have done well. And frankly, it's pulling back as of late. It's down 12% from its 52-week high, up around 240. Now we're at 210. So to me, this is a nice, healthy pullback in the midst of an uptrend that started in around March, April of last year. So I think this is a great place to be adding to. If you own it, I would just hold it. We are holding it for clients. Thanks for the call. And I hope you had a chance to participate in our InvestTalk Market Madness contest. And I'll just go over the winners for today. We had Apple, Microsoft, ServiceNow, AMD, Intuit, SYM. What was SYM? Symbotic. There we go. Symbotic. That was one of the winners. And then we had Google or Alphabet and then Himex, HIMX. Those were the ones that advanced to the second round of the Market Madness competition. Now, a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to all of it. We'll look at our main focus point, which is how should you invest during this market volatility? How should you think about your strategy and adjustments in the midst of a war, spike in oil prices, etc.? We'll dig into that. In addition, what countries will be impacted the most from this spike in energy prices? Hint, hint, it's many other countries around the world, mainly the poorer countries. Why? Because their day-to-day costs tend to be heavily weighted towards these energy inputs. So we'll look at that story. We also will cover new car prices. They're up. We'll talk about why that might be. And then if we have time, we'll look at why Apple continues to win in the age of AI, at least from a business perspective. We also have voice bank calls on Watsco and then buying credit card companies. Also, we have questions that came in via the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. But most importantly, will be your live calls. I welcome your live calls, anything finance or investment related. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART. Now we're heading into a quick break. Please remember you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via the live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on because I'll talk about today's market activity in the next segment.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. We were certainly in the red for pretty much the entire day, but we recovered a lot late in the day. And the NASDAQ only was down a little more than 0.25%. Same with the S&P. The Dow was down slightly less than 0.5% on the day. If you look at the heat map of the S&P for, let me pull up the daily. You had Tesla down over 3%, Netflix down 3%, GE down 3%, Micron down 3% on earnings. But most everything was kind of flat to new, or slightly down. You had some gains out of names like AMD and Intel and Dell. Anything kind of hardware related in the tech space did fairly well. Retail suffered. Amazon and Costco down about 0.5%. Walmart down about 0.75%. So it wasn't really that crazy of a day. I think there's still a lot of trepidation about what's going on in the Middle East. You did have WTI crude up about 0.1%. So basically flat. Brent was up. Brent crude is up 1.2%. The market is not advancing further, but still staying at these elevated levels. Really, the big news was silver was down 8.2%, copper down 2.1%, gold down 5.9%, the lowest close since mid-January. The dollar index, though, was down 0.9% with notable weaknesses across the major currencies. You had treasuries. They were mixed across the curve, but you saw front-end yields came off their early highs. So a little bit less hawkish, at least, the market is pricing in from the Fed. And there continues to be a wave of attacks in the Middle East on oil infrastructure. But I think it's notable that you did not see a big jump in prices. You did see initial claims that did tick down, initial claims for unemployment, excuse me. Continuing claims did tick up, however. You had Philadelphia Manufacturing Index that came in above consensus. New orders fell 3 points, but you also saw an acceleration in the prices paid index to the reversing the decline in January. So certainly inflation pressures continue to mount. New home sales, though, that missed consensus in a big way. 587,000, consensus was 720,000. So kind of a rough reading on that side. So a pretty interesting day. Still not a whole lot of movements, especially after the Fed announcement yesterday that didn't get a whole lot of movement either. We are in the midst of OPEX week, so options expire on Friday. Typically, you do get the market getting pinned, not a whole lot of movement until we get a resolution or get through OPEX, which would mean maybe next week volatility could increase once again. Usually there are gamma hedge unwinds, which means the market tends to move in the opposite direction of where most of the notional value of the options lean. And right now it's on the put side. What that means is that there are more bets to the downside of the market than upside, which typically as you get closer to OPEX on Friday and into next week, that actually should give a bit of a bid to the market as a whole. And who knows what happens over the weekend. There looks to be some contentiousness between the Trump administration and Israel and some of the tactics and places that Israel has bombed. So we'll see if there's a breaking of ranks on that side that causes maybe a pullback from hostilities. We shall see, something you might get over the weekend. But that was the market today. Not a ton of movement considering the backdrop of the war. We'll see what kind of reaction we get tomorrow. Let's keep things moving and pivot back to a question from our Anytime listener line.
Hi, InvestTalk. I had a question about buying into a credit card company. So Visa, MasterCard, or American Express were the three that were on my watch list. So my question is, do you have a preferred from those three company that you would allocate money towards? Or do you feel like it could even be good just to dollar cost average into the three of them evenly, not to some like super high weight in my portfolio, but just to have some exposure? I just see them as a triopoly. And also with the expenses that the cards charge, it just seems like they'll always have like that income. I also was curious your take on American Express. I know they charge higher fees to merchants, but they also don't have as many people probably who qualify for the card just because it requires a higher credit score. If that has any influence on your decision, to my first question. I know that's a lot, but I'm very interested to see what you guys say. So I'll listen on the show, and thank you, as always.
Well, first off, I like that you're looking at quality companies, quality businesses. But there are risks here, and there's a big difference between a Visa and a MasterCard and an American Express. What you have to understand is that MasterCard and Visa, those are not credit card companies. Those are credit card processing companies. Very, very different. They make money on swipe fees, on ATM fees, debit fees, excuse me. That's how they make money. Now, American Express also makes money on that, but as you said, they lend money. MasterCard and Visa do not take credit risk. They do not lend to customers. Banks lend to customers. Synchronies lend to customers. SoFi Bank lends to customers. Those are credit card companies that actually take credit risks. So very different businesses. American Express historically has a pretty nice business of doing a little bit of both, getting the swipe fees as well as charging interest on their credit cards. They tend to have a higher quality of customer. So in rougher times, they have less defaults. They don't tend to lend to low credit investors or customers, excuse me. So very different. Not very different, but somewhat different. Now, when you're stepping back and you're looking at all three and the swipe fees, what I worry, and I think you're seeing this in the chart, is that will the shifts in crypto and stable coins cause more and more people to move away from those transaction rails? Will AI start to utilize, and that's the kind of the current consensus, it could change obviously, is that AI will start to transact with stable coins and on crypto networks versus a Visa or MasterCard or American Express. And I think that's being priced in the markets. Now, that's a big question you have to answer yourself. If you think that their triopoly, as you said, it will maintain, then you want to invest, it's fine to invest in these. You want to be fading this decline in market in these names. I would pick American Express because of that higher profitability, that diversity in their business. Of the three. But frankly, I wouldn't buy any of them. because I do think over time their premiums that the market is pricing on these names is too high. And it's going to come down, have to come down a lot for me to take on the risk of their payment networks being disintermediated over time. So I'm passing on all three. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now you probably know we get questions from the comment section over on our YouTube channel. So let's go answer one of those questions now. And Jake Samuels says, hey guys, love the contest and love the show, but do you love Rheinmetall ADR? RNMBY is the symbol, RNMBY. I can't find a ton of information on it, so I don't know if I love it yet. What are your overall thoughts on the company? Is it a buy at the current levels, or are there any entry price to keep on my watch list? So this is Rheinmetall, R-H-E-I-N-M-E-T-A-L-L, and they are out of Germany. This is one of those names that boomed during the war with Ukraine because European countries started to ramp up their spending on defense. And that's what this company does. They develop and sell component systems and services for security and civil industries. And their business has done very, very well, but it's now trading at pretty high valuations. So earnings this year are supposed to be $9.19. That's up 149% from the $3.69 they earned the previous year. And they're supposed to earn $13.73 next year. Now, those estimates are coming down. It's a $360 stock. So markets kind of priced this in. It's losing momentum. It's making a low. Its high was back in the fall of last year, around $468 per share. It made a lower high in January and now continues to head lower. This is really just a play on European defense spending. I like that it's pulled back. Much more reasonable valuation than it was around $460. Now it's at $360. But frankly, I don't see, let me give you a support level on this. Because I would like to buy it. Great. I mean, I would love to buy it right around 150, 135, 140. I don't know if it'll get all the way down there. Let me see this. 300. That would be support. I would buy it at 300. It's at 360 now. So I think there's more downside to come. Thanks for the question. Let's see if I can fit in another listener question now.
Hello. I had a question on FTNT. That's Frank, Tom, Nancy, Tom. This is a stock that I read about regarding cybersecurity in a Morningstar article. I was thinking maybe I put in a little bit, maybe less than 1% in my portfolio. And, you know, depending on the results, I may either add a little bit more or just hold. Let me know what you think. Thank you.
Looking at Fortinet, FTNT is the symbol. A very good cybersecurity company. Consistent growth. Earnings last year were up 16%, supposed to be up another 8% this year and 11% next year. Now, those expectations are coming down. That is a bit of a worry. But the stock is down about 24% from its 52-week high, but it's still trading in the high 20s times from a PE perspective, forward-looking PE perspective, which isn't drastically expensive, but it's certainly not cheap. Now, this is near the top of our list of the cybersecurity names because of its high profitability, very strong balance sheet. The question is it cheap enough yet? And my simple answer is not quite. Now, is it much better risk versus reward than it was just a handful of months ago? Yes. But I want to see it down around $60 per share. Now we're at $83. That's an area that I would pick it up. So Right now, it's still trending somewhat bearish, still below the 200-day moving average. It's attempting to break above it, though. It's been kind of knocking on that door here for the last couple of months. That's the positive. So maybe a starter position here is not the worst idea because technicals are improving somewhat. But ultimately, I'm not buying it aggressively until it gets to 60. Thanks for the call. That was Fortinet. Fortinet, FTNT is the symbol, $61 billion market cap. No dividend, but is it buying back shares? Yeah, it's one of those serial capital returners to by buying back shares. That's how they don't pay a dividend. They buy back shares. $2.2 billion in free cash flow. Decent free cash flow yield. And they're buying back shares, which I certainly like. So I'm going to give Fortinet a mild thumbs up right now, but I would give it a huge thumbs up around 60. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story. Labor market Iran war impact. Jobs data shows resilience. U.S. jobless claims continue to show a sluggish but stable labor market, both low layoffs anchoring economic stability even as global conflicts rage. However, economists warn that prolonged Iran war tensions could eventually threaten labor market strength. We'll get to that story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls now. Here in Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds. Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
Call Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP on the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
One thing we know about chaos is that it breeds opportunity. And that's what our main focus point is about today and about the war volatility we are experiencing and whether it should impact your overall strategy. So we'll look at different asset classes and how to think about those asset classes in context to the recent market sell-off. The first is obviously equities. And this feels disruptive. We know that. But the question is this something existential? Is it going to have a long-lasting impact on the economy or relatively short-term? And what is the market priced in already? The market is adjusting to this new information, but is it a signal to investors to abandon their long-term investment strategy? Most likely not. The best buying opportunities are when the headlines look rough, not when stocks are at an all-time high. Now, could it get rougher? Absolutely. Are we at that crescendo of fear? I'm not quite feeling it yet. I get a lot of questions. I kind of know based on calls into the show where sentiment is. It's very, very interesting. It's actually one of the ways that help make decisions about with clients. People are all calling about a particular sector. Well, that's probably a sector that we should be trimming. If everyone's worried and thinks they should raise cash and go to cash, well, then that might be a good buying opportunity. So we're somewhere in the middle based on my sentiment analysis. But more on the bearish side, meaning we're getting close to a good buying opportunity, especially in many sectors. So this is a time to tweak your portfolio. Rebalance. And a reminder that you should rebalance probably quarterly. Going into this year, it was a great time to adjust your portfolio and rebalance closer to overweight harder assets that maybe didn't do quite as well last year and underweight bits in the sky. And you saw that with the sell-off in tech throughout this year. You usually don't get that volatility right at the end of the quarter or the beginning of the quarter. It's usually somewhere in the middle. Now we're getting a little bit of volatility now, but that also means that once we get to the end of this quarter, there's going to be a lot of good buying opportunities. So this is a time to think about rebalancing your portfolio, laying out a strategy, and slowly working your way towards that. Then there's fixed income. What should you avoid? Well, in an inflationary environment, bonds tend to not do very well, and you get a sell-off in bonds and duration assets. So talking about 10-year bonds, 20-year bonds, 30-year bonds, they tend to sell off, and you've seen that over the past 2-3 weeks. So stick to high quality, short to basically short-term fixed income, and make sure that that is the money that is set aside for the next kind of 2 to 3 years. Now, if you need cash to pay bills over the next 12 months, that should be probably more like short-term T-bills, high-yield money market accounts, etc. Then there's gold. Today, I have not been buying a lot of gold and silver for new clients for about 3 months now. Today was the first time that really stepped in with size into that market. And gold is a diversifier. Yes, it's selling off now, stronger dollar. Gulf countries are selling off assets in order to fund a lot of their adjustments, shall you say, to their budget in the short term. So that's creating a little bit of volatility. But ultimately, I do think this is a good buying opportunity in gold. Then there's another way to think about the sell-off, and that is taxes. Volatility can create opportunity, especially when you're talking about potentially tax loss harvesting or doing Roth conversions. You can convert securities that have maybe declined a little bit without selling them. Remember, you can do that. You don't have to do the conversion in cash. You can actually convert securities. So if you're down on a particular security, you can convert that into your Roth IRA. You're paying taxes on that full amount, but it's on a lower dollar amount because of that price decline. So something to think about as well as we go through this market correction, which frankly is healthy. In any given year, you should always expect a 10% decline in markets at any given moment. That is the norm. So don't think that this market decline is anything but ordinary. Now we've got time, so let's roll in another listener question now.
Hello, I just had a question today about a stock called Watsco, WSO. I want to know before I pull the trigger, do you think is advisable to jump in at the cost it is at the moment? If you can please let me know, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your help.
Looking at Watsco, WSO is the symbol, and they distribute air conditioning, heating, and refrigeration equipment and related parts and supplies to residential customers. They sell electric and oil furnaces, commercial air conditioning and heating equipment. Their business has done very well in the midst of an AI. Well, actually, now that I look at it, it hasn't. If I'm looking at earnings peaked in 2022 at $14.20, and they're supposed to earn $12.64, only up 3% from last year. And those estimates are coming down as well. So one of my questions, even though I'm looking at the profitability, which is good, around 17% return on equity, market cap, right on $15.5 billion with no debt, nice 3% dividend yield, but their payout ratio is pretty high. So I don't think that dividend's really going up in the shorter term. I wonder, why is their business not booming? Most other HVAC companies are doing very, very well. Theirs isn't. And shares outstanding continue to go up. Why is that? Now, the technicals are good. It bottoms back in November. It's now in an uptrend above the 100-day moving average, but below the 200-day moving average. So it's in a tentative uptrend, shall we say. Overall, I think the valuation is okay. Enterprise value to be around 19. It's about fairly valued. But my issue is the lack of growth. You're trading at a high multiple. But why is business not booming in the midst of the AI data center build out? It's clearly losing market share to, for example, a Comfort Systems USA. Same business. And their earnings since 2022 has gone from $5.29 all the way up to $44 expected next year. Just massive growth. So if you're trying to buy a HVAC company that is crushing it and trading at a market premium, I'd much rather buy one that is positioned for the AI data center build out. Now, it doesn't mean that's not without its risks, but I'd much rather own those type of names. So I'm passing on Watsco. Now let's pivot over to another voicemail question now.
Hello, gentlemen. I wanted your thoughts on a stock I've had on my watch list for quite some time. It's Victor, Valvoline. Thank you for your thoughts.
Looking at Valvoline, most people know they make engine oil, antifreeze, coolants, transmission fluid, gear oil, grease, filters, wipers, etc. Strong business. Consistent growth. 2021, they only earned 58 cents. But last year, they earned $1.59. And this was during $1.70 this year, and then $2.01 next year. And it's a $32 stock. So based on that, you're talking about a mid-teens forward-looking multiple. Not terrible. You have earnings or revenue growth last quarter up 11%. Earnings are up 16%. The technicals are not fantastic. But I do like the fundamentals. Return equity around 30%. Free cash flow, only about $57 million. That's probably my biggest worry, is that free cash flow has dipped and has not recovered really. Cash from operations kind of has been up around $320 million. It peaked out around $408 back in 2021. Its operating margins right around 17%, which is down from its peak back in 2017. And it's been rolling over. So I don't love that. Is this an input cost situation? I'm not sure. It does have a little bit of debt, but it has been buying back shares. I like that. Overall, I like the profitability. I like the business, but love the business. I don't really love the chart because it's in a downtrend. This would have to be a long-term play. Meaning you're going to have to probably deal with a little more downside volatility, but it's probably a good portfolio diversifier because of its brand name, its consistency of its earnings. And so I like that. So as a small position in a portfolio, sure, but you really have to have a very long-term view, and it has to be as more of a portfolio diversifier than you making a ton of money in the short term. Thanks for the call. Let's touch a bit on the countries that are going to be impacted by high oil prices the most. Now, put simply, it's probably going to be some of the poorest countries in the world. You're talking about countries like Nepal, Jordan, Pakistan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. Now, they were impacted greatly during the initial invasion of Ukraine when oil prices spiked, and you had countries like Sri Lanka that struggled. They're already shutting down certain businesses to conserve fuel. Pakistan is closing schools, universities, and moving everything online to conserve fuel. And countries like Nepal have long waits for cooking gas that they use every day. Now, there are basically two ways to look at this. One is the exposure do they have to the input costs of energy. And then their resilience, which means how much in reserves do they have, both in actual fuel, but also foreign currency reserves to actually buy fuel at these prices. Egypt spends about 3% of its GDP on oil, gets nearly half of its supplies from the Gulf region. Pakistan spends 4% of its GDP on oil and gas and sources nearly 90% from the Middle East. Pakistan has reserves that will only cover about 3 months of imports. And Egypt still carries a huge amount of debt. And that this is obviously going to strain that, and it's going to be difficult for them to finance their government. And this is why global investors are pulling money from emerging market debt funds. So they're going to be very tied, or the correlation to the broader market will be very tied to these oil prices. Now, some countries that are going to hold up well, countries like Indonesia and the Philippines, they get their oil typically elsewhere, and they have a lot of, they have a strong balance sheet. They have a lot of reserves. Thailand spends 7% of its GDP on oil imports, more than any country, but they hold 100 days of import reserves, strategic oil reserves like we have. And they have 7 months of imports to cover their foreign exchange. Now, India is probably the economy that, the big economy that people are worried about the most. They spend about 3% of their GDP on energy from abroad, and about half of that comes from the Middle East. But they have foreign currency reserves that cover about 7 months of imports. And they have oil stocks that will last about 70 days or so. And they have refineries that can process low-quality crude, which they can get from Russia as well. But the longer-term impact is actually going to be downstream and probably be felt in fertilizer. Nitrogen fertilizer is made from natural gas, and it's becoming more and more expensive. So you're going to see a lot of stresses from the in these economies more and more, with a higher cost of fuel and eventually fertilizer. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk about cars and car prices. And there's an interesting dynamic happening, and it's a microcosm of our entire economy. The K-shaped economy. We talk about this a lot. But the car business is grappling with stubbornly high prices. There's an affordability problem. Republicans blame environmental and safety regulations. Democrats obviously blame tariffs. But whatever the end result or the cause is, the end result is that more and more cars are selling for prices well above $40,000. And few budget-friendly cars are available. The average selling price of U.S. vehicles last year was $47,000. Which means that lower and middle-income consumers basically have to buy used cars. The average transaction price is up 40% from December of 2018 through December of last year. 40%. In 2010, 96 models sold at a sticker price at or above $40,000. 96 models. Last year, that was 156 models that were offered at levels of $60,000 or more. So inflation adjusted. The old 40 is the new 60. That means budget models are becoming even more scarce. In 2010, there were 25 models priced at around $20,000 or less. Last year, there were only 20 models available at today's equivalent price, which is around $30,000. So think about 2010. A $20,000 car then is basically a $30,000 car now. And there are less models available. The share of U.S. new vehicles purchased from households earning $100,000 or less stayed around 50 to 60% for a number of years until the recent decade. Last year, those that make $100,000 or less accounted for only 36% of new vehicle sales. They just can't afford it. And then when it comes to profit margins, they're actually up. GM made an operating profit about $4,200 per vehicle sold in 2024. That's up from $3,000 in 2018 because they're selling more SUVs and pickup trucks. Ford said they'll have five models under $40,000 available by the end of the decade. Just five. And so prices just continue to go up as the input costs go up. And the tariffs are probably the biggest part of this. Because these engines, to make them more fuel efficient, are not much different than they were before. Especially when it comes to their input costs. It's just more technology. And a lot of these are electric. And so that's certainly more expensive. But you're going to see this more and more and more is prices are going to stay elevated because the input costs are just higher. That's the bottom line. So don't expect to see a big correction in new car prices. This will probably be the new norm for the foreseeable future. I'm Justin Klein. And I remind you about KP Financial's parallel investing, where we make a trade for our clients, we make the same trade for ourselves. Same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatments. We invest right alongside our clients. If you want to learn more, just head over to investtalk.com. And please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Keep listening for daily updates on the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.